Feldman's Music, Esper's Edits. It's time for Gaiden Insert Credit. This is Insert Credit Gaiden, a side story to your Insert Credit main quest. This week, Brandon interviews Jeremy Blaustein, CEO of Dragon Baby and translator for Demon School. He's also translated some of Konami's biggest hits, including Metal Gear Solid, Suikoden, and Silent Hill 2. But enough talk. Have at you!
Okay, so we've got another interview. We have Jeremy from Dragon Baby, who, full disclosure, is doing the localization of Demon School. I just have to say that in advance. I wanted to talk about your life and your career and the interesting things that you have gotten up to. How did you... Because you've worked on a bunch of seminal titles, especially a bunch of Konami ones.
Yeah.
How did this all start for you? How did you... Did you come out here to Japan before that?
I started studying Japanese in college. And the why to that is because I wanted to speak a weird language, and the Welsh teacher told me that I'd be crazy to study Welsh because there's no money in it.
Yeah, that's true.
So I said, okay, let me look back in the card catalog, or the catalog, and, you know, Japanese was my second choice.
Interesting.
So I studied a couple years. And then I came to Japan, like a lot of people do, as an English teacher.
Right.
I did that for a year.
What year was that?
That was 92.
Okay.
Or 1, something like that. I wasn't particularly lauded for my teaching talents.
Sure.
Because I spoke really good Japanese already then, and I would explain, you know, grammatical concepts in Japanese, so they don't want that for foreign teachers. They just want you to...
So read the book.
Yeah, just speak English, you foreigner, shut the fuck
right.
up.
I see. Yeah.
Excuse me, can I curse on this?
As you like.
Yeah, so I left that after a year, and then my twin brother was working at Konami in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my first job in the industry was actually for a couple months at a company called Jalico.
Yeah,
in Chicago.
I know Jalico.
You know Jalico, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was way back. You know, that was the early 90s.
So you had like a little industry experience.
What did
you do at Jalico?
Well, I was supposed to be an associate producer, whatever that means. Doesn't mean anything, really.
Uh-huh.
You know, basically, they wanted me to talk to Japan. You know, at the time, the way it worked is Japan would make all the games.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they'd say, okay, we have these 6 games for you that could potentially be sold in America. What do you think of them?
Yeah.
And we would look at them and, you know, be all this weird Japanese stuff, and we'd be thinking, like, well, how can we...
An example
would be like that monkey... What's that monkey... The Chinese legend of the monkey guy.
Sure, yeah, monkey game.
So they had, you know, a monkey game, and, you know, we took a look at it, and it's super weird. We don't...
Right.
Nobody knows anything about it. And so we, you know, we said, like, well, if we change the his little head thing, we add one sprite here, it's going to look like a headdress kind of thing. But that was localization back in the day.
Right.
Changing the sprite.
So you were there in the very early days.
Yeah.
Of that.
Yeah.
So you had done that, and then you moved to Japan
as
an English teacher, and then...
Yeah, and then so my brother at Konami Chicago talked to a Japanese guy who was there and said, hey, can my twin brother get a job interview? And so I went to Tokyo, did a job interview, and, you know, got the job. But they put me in the business department, so you know, it was very frustrating.
Yeah.
I would, you know, the R&D, they... caught on swiftly that I was the only foreigner in the company, and so they'd start saying, hey, do Americans like this? And then that turned into, hey, can you write this, you know, some text here, and hey, then you can translate this, and hey, can you work on Snatcher? And
yeah, so what games did you work on during
there was like
I know there's a bunch of them.
Yeah, so there would be the Rockstar Rocket Knights, both the Nintendo and the Sega. There was Animaniacs. I think maybe that was on both too as well. And there was, you know, there's Tiny Toons, and there's Biker Mice from Mars, and Snatcher, and there's probably stuff on Castlevania's, and, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, Contra Hardcore.
Contra Hardcore.
That one, yeah. That was actually my first time I went to America to kind of direct the recording, which is like, at the time it was just like, can you make your ooh a little bit longer? And then, ooh! No, no, no.
So you were,
I think you're getting stabbed by a spear here. Ah!
So there was voice directing for
a
Genesis game?
There was a tiny bit of voice in it.
Yeah, there was
a tiny bit of voice.
Interesting that you had to.
But I
figured they would
that
do that
too.
In-house.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you? But my twin brother's working at Konami Chicago, so it was like, it was funny because he, you know, back in those days there was no email, so we had international fax twice a day. And we would write, yeah, we're twins, so we'd write these like funny, like inside jokes to each other all the time.
Yeah. Concert Hardcore, I guess that would be the first like multi-ending game that you worked on as a localizer, probably, right?
Yeah, I suppose so.
That's kind of an interesting thing to think about. Yeah,
I never thought about that.
So with Genesis, Mega Drive, Super Nintendo games, you had to work a lot within character constraints. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Character constraints? You mean limitations? Yeah. Well, I mean, that's been something that's followed me my whole career. Never.
Sure, but they were like really, really strict at that. Like, for example, I had to localize a Neo Geo game, and you could only do so many characters per line.
Yeah, no,
you're
100% correct, and it was worse back then too because there was so little experience with localization. So I mean, it would be like, you know, because in Japanese you can write like attack with one, you know, kanji, and then they want to use what, like, you know, so you'd have to put like A for attack or D, you know, it's pretty you're scraping the barrel.
Yeah, so how did you sort of, I assume you all were kind of making it up as you went along at that point. So, like, what did you try to give yourself any guidelines, or was it on a case by case basis, or at some point did you try to have guidelines?
Well, like you said, I didn't know what. At some point, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, guidelines. Like when, what was one of the first ones? Vandal Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Vandal Hearts. But also true of Suikoden. You'll look at that, and there's like every other line has like 18 ellipses.
Yeah.
Because at the time, first of all, there was no LQA. Nobody was going to look at what I translated.
Yeah.
It just like went right into it.
Yeah.
And so they give me a text box, and the Japanese, if it covered the entire text box, I thought, oh well, I should cover the entire text box too. In order to do that, I need to put in this many ellipses, and you know, there wasn't anyone to talk to. There's literally just no one to.
Right, and
it would just drop it on me.
And there weren't other.
There was no other
localization people for you to talk to.
No, it wasn't that. So there wasn't even the word localization. I didn't hear that word till, I don't know.
Right. I guess it was just translation at that time.
Yeah. It is translation.
Sure. Well,
of course, there's localization, you know,
and naturalization, which I
yeah,
like.
Right.
But
it's the, you know, it's the confusing of the two things. I mean, translation is, it's always been translation, and translation itself is localization.
Yeah.
So it kind of bugs me that people even say that. Like,
well, I mean, I guess people are splitting hairs between direct translation and like more nuanced or like what is the intention
versus
the...
It's true, but those people that want to split those hairs, they do so because they often don't understand the nature of, you know, sort of translation, because maybe they're not bilingual, so they don't know how much stuff changes just by default.
It also could be the amount of time you've been doing this versus the amount of time they've been doing it that makes you want to keep that term as well. But getting back to the Konami stuff, so like Suikoden, there's a lot of...
I was no longer at Konami by the time I...
You were doing Suikoden?
Yeah. Or
So what were you doing?
I got married and I had a baby, so the only way I would have stayed in Japan was if Konami had put me into R&D, and I was supposed to go into R&D. They wanted... R&D called me over, and you know, I made the official request to switch over. I wanted to make games. And they, for some reason, the president of the company decided it was better for me to sit at a, you know, computer doing shipping orders that a Japanese person could do 10 times faster. So I was in the business department, and you know, I helped out with R&D, but he wouldn't let me go over there. I couldn't get into dorm, so I went back to America to be a, you know, papa in the country. And I thought translation would be the best, the only way that I could, you know.
Yeah, make money and stay.
Make money and stay at home.
Yeah, and they. But you continued to do so for Konami.
Well, yeah, time. I mean,
not exclusively,
No, I wasn't. No, not at all.
Yeah,
I was. You know, I was translating everything back then. I was translating medical patents and electrical things.
Okay.
And anything to earn money, and you know, Konami needed translations, and there wasn't anywhere to go.
Yeah. So right with something like Suikoden, there's a lot of. Not regional references, but like references, like some of the characters are supposed to be kind of like other famous characters and stuff. How do you deal with that kind of stuff in that era? Did you even know about those things at that time also?
Well, so first of all, Suikoden, you know, every game's a special case. And Suikoden, case of Suikoden, You have 108, you know, Stars of Destiny, right? Yeah. And, you know, just a massive amount of text. But what we got before the Suikoden team left, because what they would do then is they would, a Japanese team would finish their game, and they'd be like, see ya, we're going on vacation. Uh-huh. And they don't come back. And they just say, at the time, it would be like, okay, here's your text dump, get this thing translated.
So you wouldn't get any
zero
back and forth with
zero.
Them.
Yeah. Zero, zero. So, but I didn't tell you the terrible part.
Okay.
So this text dump, you know, you're a programmer, you probably understand this much better than I do. It didn't have the character names in it.
Mm.
All we had was the lines for 108 wow. whatever characters. So we didn't know who was talking. And so while we're translating, we had to, you know, I hired a bunch of people and I translated and they translated. We thought, well, maybe if we split the characters, we'll keep consistent voice. But we didn't even know who what characters were speaking.
Yeah.
So we're playing the game. We're trying to figure out who's speaking here. Is it a man? Is it a woman? Is it a, you know, is it a kobold? Or, you know,
yeah.
Back to the question you asked. I don't think we had that level of luxury. It, you know, if a translator that was doing it said, oh, hey, this is this character, then we'd be like, great, but you're talking about, you know, you're talking about time deadlines that don't allow
yeah.
for anything other than doing your best and moving on.
Yeah.
And so now it's like funny because, you know, you'll have people who are trying to become influencers by dissecting games that were translated 30 years ago and mm-hmm. saying, hey, here's a mistake.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, dude, do you know how much time we had to
Yeah, it's people definitely don't.
Also, localization is so much more advanced
it's
now.
It's much more robust, yeah, certainly. Yeah. Yeah, it's people definitely don't think about that, what it was like at that time, yeah. or largely know that, yeah, you would just get info dumps or.
Yeah, it was just text dumps, yeah.
So, with something like, you worked on Symphony of the Night, correct?
Yeah.
So with something like that, did you
that
direct...
That was much better. That was... Oh, God, no.
And you directed the voice?
Unfortunately, I did not, as many fans will understand. a very good friend of mine directed it. Unfortunately, he's Japanese, and although he speaks good English, what I've learned over the years is that you can't direct something in a language that's not your native language. You'll just miss stuff. Yeah, but the sound was terrible, too, was it not?
It was very peaky.
Like, it sounded like they recorded it in a bathroom.
Yeah, but that might be what this podcast sounds like right now, too. So.
Oh, okay.
I can't throw stones. I want to get back to Castlevania, but first the...
But I had that game to play, so...
That's good.
It was much, yeah. And that's why I changed that line, by the way, because I was playing it.
Which line?
What is a Man?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was playing it, and I was like, hey, God, this I just can't make this Japanese line sound as dramatic as it should when he throws that glass down, and so let me get a different line.
Well, it's funny when, because you wind up with some of these things that I'm sure you thought about, but some of them maybe you didn't think about as much that wind up becoming
it's very true.
Iconic lines in the future. Like,
very true.
I still sometimes, if I'm interested in something, I'll think, I'm interested in this, which is the weird way that Alucard says... He wants to browse the shop.
Oh. He says, I'm interested in this?
I'm interested in this.
That sounds like a bad translation.
Yeah. a little bit.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
I'm interested in this. I don't know. I wonder what the Japanese was.
Yeah, maybe. So I had the realization at some point when I was trying to direct the voice for a game that I was the creative lead on for Square Enix that wound up getting canceled. But... I realized at some point why some of the voice was the way it was because they were in the chat with me. They were like zooming in from afar.
Mm.
And while I was doing these recording sessions, and there was this one lady who just couldn't, she hadn't done game via before.
Yeah.
And she was just like overemphasizing everything and talking like not a human being. She was just going and so I kept being like, okay, we're going to dial it back. We're going to do it more naturalistically. I want you to hit this part. And at one point, the Japanese folks that were sitting in were like, can we just ask you a question? And I was like, yeah. What didn't you like about that? Because it sounded great. And I realized they liked the... To them, we Americans sound like da-da-da, do-da-do-da.
Right.
Like, we're just bouncing all over the place. And they heard this lady like...
Yeah, so they assumed that
talking like a caricature, and they're like, that's English.
Well, I got news for you. That exact same thing applies to any person that's dealing in outside of their native language is going to have, you know, all sorts of holes in their game that they don't necessarily know that they've got.
Yeah,
you know, You could think you're doing a great job, but that's why people don't translate into, like, that's why I'll, my Japanese is, I don't meet people who speak better Japanese than me, but I'll never translate into Japanese. It would be stupid.
Mm, yeah. I see what you mean. So, like, with those recordings and things, you sat in and directed some of those.
So how
did those back and forths go for, like, things? Were there situations where it felt more stilted, or did you...
Are you talking about Castlevania?
Oh, I'm talking about whatever.
It was not Castlevania, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, it's like you said, a director, it's a difficult job. You have to be really, 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 really on top of what's happening in super real time and make super quick decisions.
Yeah.
You only have one chance for a line, and if you let that line go... So you can't let anything go. You can't just let a voice actor go in there and just get on automatic. You have to... and that's why it's really good for a translator to direct, yeah, because they know the voice that they want.
And back in those days, as I understand, there was a lot of, like, getting whatever Americans were around
you're talking about recordings in Japan?
Yeah, in Japan.
Oh, my God, yeah. We did Silent Hill 2 in Japan, you know, and it's you're getting models to come to your auditions. You're getting people who maybe have done some English textbook recordings. Uh-huh. So no one's a voice actor.
Yeah.
At the time.
So what was that like? How did you choose between these people? Just like the timbre of their voice, or what did you do?
It depends on the job. I mean, on the project.
So let's say Silent Hill 2.
Well, Silent Hill 2. I would say that by the time the last day of auditioning came, we still hadn't filled James's part,
mm-hmm,
and we didn't have any more people. And this guy Guy Sheehy, whose kid had come in to audition for the little kid's part,
mm-hmm,
he says, listen, I'm unemployed. Can I try to audition? I guess he'd like done acting in college and stuff like this.
Uh-huh.
This guy was, I don't want to bad mouth anyone, but on the other hand, I'm a truth teller, so I'll just say it like I saw it. He wasn't a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, he couldn't act at all, and he couldn't adjust his acting to any... You'll find, you know, if you direct, there's certain people that are like, really get what you say, and they'll change their thing. And some people that are completely, you know, incapable of doing it. Like,
yeah,
100% incapable.
Yeah.
But what he had was, he was a very depressed-looking guy.
And, uh-huh,
and he had no... because he couldn't act, he had no emotion.
Yeah, he had no affect.
Yeah, no affectation at all. I'm just a depressed guy.
Which and kind of helped.
It worked. I mean, that's how I saw the character. So, you know, we talked it over and we gave it to him. I hoped that he could do a little bit better acting, but, you know, there's that game, like you just said, it was Japanese actors. We did the best that we could with who we had. Some people were brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Some people were not brilliant.
I mean, I feel like it works for a game like that where it's so... dreamy / nightmarish.
Everyone says that.
Yeah.
Everyone says that, and I'm really glad that worked. But it was just
that's kind
just
of like a happy accident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Accident.
Yeah. Well. Good.
Although, you know, it was true though that I was going for, like, you know, realism, and I didn't want any of that Troy Bakery kind of.
Yeah.
Hey there, I'm James. How are you? You know, like a radio voice. I don't like that very much.
That would have been odd.
Yeah.
In those early days, were, like, the Mega Drive, Genesis days, were you doing this in isolation, even within the office?
No.
So then you were talking to people.
Yeah, I was working in a business office, and, like, I remember Animaniacs came, right? And we licensed it. But the Japanese developers, they didn't know what Animaniacs was.
Sure.
They didn't understand the humor, they didn't understand the appeal, they didn't understand anything.
Yeah.
And Konami Chicago, I remember they sent me like a huge box of like VHS tapes of Animaniacs. And so like I had to watch all of Animaniacs and understand the humor, which I, you know, of course I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, well, you know, we're going to make an Animaniacs game. And the Nintendo guys did it differently than the Sega guys.
Yeah.
But they all wanted to talk to me because nobody understood what, you know, what was the deal with these things. So then they just said, look, can you just write a script? The same thing for Batman and Robin.
You know, Adventures of Batman and Robin?
Yeah, yeah.
The Genesis one?
Foul Play, well, that's mine.
Oh. Yeah.
Foul, F-O-W.
Yeah, very good.
Inside references to Jethro Tull and Frank Zappa whenever I can.
Interesting. Yeah. What other places have you inserted those?
Snatcher, man. I put in a ton of stuff like that. I got, you do the video call to me on Snatcher, and it's like, you know, I got Buddy Guy, and, you know, and my cat's biting me, and, you know, I make all these stupid jokes.
Interesting. And so with Snatcher, were you working with Kojima's team, or because
it wasn't Kojima's team, it was a team that was dedicated to porting it all over.
Right, because which Snatcher were you on? The Sega? It would be the Sega CD one.
Sega CD.
Yeah, because it was first on like PC-98 and then PC Engine, right.
And I think R&D in that time, they requisitioned me to come over to R&D for 2 or 3 months, and I worked in R&D then. Best time of my life. I loved it.
If you kept a couple dozen copies of those, you could put a down payment on a house. Now. Yeah.
But you know, the thing was, it didn't. Nobody bought the thing, so
right.
How were we going to think it was going to be worth anything?
Indeed. Yeah. You just never know.
A lot of my games turned out to be weirdy like that, like Castlevania. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah, Symphony of the Night really, it really had legs.
Didn't and, it? And it was beautiful, beautiful, beautiful game.
Did you work also on then Bloodlines?
I did Bloodlines. That was before it.
Genesis 1.
Yeah, I mean, I was tangentially involved. I don't remember really doing anything for that.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it was like right after I got there.
And yeah, so do you have any experience with a lot of TurboGrafx CD games, which I wouldn't
TurboGrafx,
think you would.
Yeah, back in the day, I got a twin brother.
Yeah.
I bet on NEC to be the
to
winner.
Make it?
Yeah, and he got a.
They could have.
He got the Sega.
Yeah, I mean, NEC could have done it. They just chose to make the PCFX after that.
So I played. I played a lot of TurboGrafx. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of the
Bonks.
Bonks. Mm-hmm, Bonks Revenge. A lot of the Western releases on the CD had a lot of like New York accents and stuff, and it gave the real vibe of guys in the office recorded this.
Which what are you talking about?
Games like Red Alert, aka Last Alert, Final Zone 2, even games like East, Books 1 and 2.
I wonder if it was East Coast people doing it, or if it was something else going on.
Yeah, I wonder also. So I was just wondering if you had the experience of like, okay, we have no budget, we're just gonna use guys in the office.
No.
No, never?
No.
That's good.
Although I was used as we need an extra voice here. I've done that a few times, but.
Yeah.
I think that people just generally do a New York accent when you tell any voice actor, you know,
do
he's a
accent.
Tough character and they're gonna do this, you know, hackneyed Brooklyn.
Yeah, yeah. So you worked on the Shadow Hearts series.
Yeah.
Anything interesting about that?
A lot interesting about that. Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Well, let's see. Shadow Hearts 2. I actually worked on the original Shadow Hearts, which was a learning experience. I recorded it in New York with the Pokemon guys because my sister was a Pokemon for 6 years, the voice of Meow.
Oh.
8 years. Yeah.
Nice.
She set the voice of Meowth. I mean, she's more famous than I am.
Yeah.
Maddie Blaustein, shout out to my deceased sister.
Oh.
Anyway, so we were recording that in New York, and it wasn't great, but we did Shadow Hearts 2 in L.A., and we got the tall actor, of course, what's his name? Andrew Epcar, who's a great voice actor and, you know, knows a ton of people, and so it was kind of his posse that did it.
Nice.
And he directed it, and I co-directed it. And when I say co-directed, I just want everyone to understand what that means. In the case of Metal Gear Solid, for example, at that time, that not what did it mean, but, I mean, directors have different styles. And, you know, my experience on Metal Gear Solid was that I went in, I'd written the whole script, and I had a really, really strong idea of what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Every voice, I knew exactly how it should be inflected, and I wasn't Konami's representative there, but I sort of was, and they thought I was. They all thought I was a Konami person, and Chris Zimmerman, she would do the directing side of things that was like, let's go to this page, and now you're up, and, you know, all the organizational things, but I felt very much that she was not on top of, you know, because these were all her posse people, and that's great. It was a move, it was like, oh, that's great, let's go on, let's go on, and I was like, wait a minute, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I did a lot of voice direction there. You know, and it was good. I was really on top of it, and I liked voice directing. Shadow Hearts 2 is kind of similar thing. Richard was doing his style, and I was doing my great, great cast. My God, did you play that game?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's the best voiceover
that you've worked on.
That I've worked on, I think so. Yeah, it was great. It's a funny script. Great game.
Yeah, I like those Shadow Hearts games. They're odd.
They are really odd.
Yeah, they're strange. They've got a good vibe to them though, like visual vibe as well as
humor too. And he's also big into history.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely has that alternate history
dark.
Kind of feeling. Yeah,
dark too.
Yeah. So I guess you should talk a little bit more about Metal Gear Solid as well. Did you have some idea of what that would become when you worked on it? I mean, coming from Snatcher, maybe?
Yeah, I had some idea. I mean...
And I guess you'd read the script, so...
Yeah, I mean, it certainly wasn't the script that made me think that it was, it was only the graphics. It was it was so new and revolutionary from my perspective. Plus, I was really into Snatcher, and I knew Kojima was a storyteller.
Yeah.
And when I saw the graphics, and then the way they started promoting it, I started to get the idea it might be big.
And at that point, were you translating things after they were out in Japan, or
no?
So you were getting early code still.
Yeah, yeah. Like so, you were talking about that, or he was talking about the opening scene, the famous sub scene. You know, so I think I had that on a VHS tape.
Hmm.
And that was the first thing I translated.
You still have any of that stuff?
I got a VHS tape somewhere, but I think it's just a promotional.
I see.
So no, I don't have anything. Oh, you know what I do have? I have the three original blue binders that I got from, so I got text, they didn't, in those days they didn't send you, there was no digital text file, so I got these three huge binders. One was a script and one was the background weapons and one was characters and... huge amounts of details, background details, that really helped me.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, if you're ever interested in getting that preserved, my buddy Frank, who's also on this podcast, runs the Video Game History Foundation.
Well, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really know what the... I don't think even back then I signed an NDA.
Because he'll just scan it and digitize it so that, future historians can research it.
I lost a few pages, I'm sorry. I remember giving them away for some reason, my daughter's birthday party, she had friends there, and I'm like, here's a color picture from my...
Wow. Well, still, whatever's left.
Yeah,
is
it's
gonna,
a lot.
For whatever projects will be extremely interesting. So, yeah, let's talk later about that.
Sure.
That'll be cool. Thinking about other stuff from the old days, what were your biggest challenges at that time? You got your, lack of information... A lack of people to hire from, a small pool to hire from for voice talent.
Yeah.
What other kinds of challenges would you say were more unique to that era?
Oh, okay. That's a good question. I've already mentioned a lot of them. One would be the fact that things weren't digital, the fact that there was no experience in localization, so the teams were just no support, no LQA.
Yeah.
No one's reading your stuff. No one's answering your questions. And I'm mindful of the fact that, meanwhile at Square Enix, they have their own localization department, and those guys are getting 3 years to translate a game, and they're talking to R&D, and so it's really frustrating, because I would, we would inevitably make mistakes, and there wasn't much to do about it.
Yeah, how would it feel if you, played Secret N and saw a typo?
Well, it's and my kids would find them, too, Dark Cloud 2.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this item called... all it said was in katakana, it said denki goma. And in Japanese, a denki is a electric.
Yeah.
And a goma is a sesame.
Right.
So naturally we thought it was, because it's written in katakana too, which is a foreign loan word script. So, I don't know, we didn't know what it was. It was just in the midst of, all the stuff to translate.
Mm-hmm.
So someone translated it as electric sesame.
Uh-huh.
Turned out it was an electric top.
Ah. Oh.
So that's in there. And you have to look for a... Electric Sesame, which you're not going to find, trust me.
that's interesting stuff. Any other ones like that that you can remember? Because that's the stuff that kind of...
Yeah, well, fans of Metal Gear Solid will fondly recall that instead of me saying that big boss was infertile. Uh-huh. I said that he was in a coma.
Yeah, that's different.
Yeah.
That's different.
So, yeah, mistakes happen. But nowadays, we, you know, we have multiple layers of checks for this, and it's much more professional than it was back then. It just was a lack of understanding of the necessities and the structure. And so it's always a problem. Time's always a problem. Emojis, line limitations are always a problem. Money's always a problem. But mostly time.
Yeah.
Mostly time.
Yeah, and I feel like at that time, there was...
There's one more thing that I got to mention.
Uh-huh.
And that's that at the time, we didn't think that localization was anything other than making a product for this market.
That's what kind of what I was about to say. Yeah,
yeah, we're thinking the same way. It was like, we just wanted people in that region, since it's region locked and they're not going to play it, and we just wanted them to have a good experience. And so that was what I considered my job to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it was... In those days, Japan was still the number one market for them. And
right. Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, and then...
They were only making games for themselves.
Yeah, and
like,
then...
Even Kojima, he didn't... Like, Metal Gear Solid 1, I swear to God, I don't think he was thinking about the international market, really.
Right. Yeah, and then nowadays, it's like the international market is the market.
Right. Yeah.
And so you have to think about it very early and get that all going.
Right, that's true.
Yeah, it's different times.
Yeah, and so that's why when people talk about these issues of translation versus localization, and in those days, I just remind them that, you know, in those days we didn't have the internet, and so, no, people didn't think that people from Japan were going to be comparing notes on how something was translated.
Yeah, and in fact, they often, as far as I know, I mean, they couldn't read what came back, so it was kind of like, there it is.
No thought at all about it.
I guess, how do you feel about having accidentally created some iconic lines?
I feel fucking good.
Yeah?
Yeah, well, I mean...
Good.
Hey.
Well, and I'm sure some of it was intentional. Like, I don't want to imply that everything good that happened was an accident.
Yeah, I mean, most of it was intentional.
Yeah.
But not, die, monster! You know, like, I didn't intend for it to be really terrible audio recording and become ironically...
It's
limited translation itself is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's like, but the actors didn't know that they were...
It's weird for me because to some extent with some of these older games, when you retranslate them to be like more natural or more modern, they don't work as well for me. And I think it's because a somewhat stilted...
I know what you're going to say.
Translation matches like
what the
game was like.
Well, also, some people have this weird idea. They want you to directly translate something from Japanese to English because they think it sounds more like Japanese if it's broken English. But that, I don't understand.
Oh, yeah, no, I wasn't going to go that direction. Because, I was actually just talking to 8-4 yesterday, and there's this kind of silly to me debate between people who want... like, quote, one-to-one translation, and those who are like, I personally think that things should be essentially rewritten in English so that the intent comes
across. Where was 8-4 on that?
Oh, they say if you want direct one-to-one, then you should learn Japanese.
Yeah.
Which I agree with.
Yeah, and go somewhere else, because I'm not going to do it.
Right. Yeah, because like... You can't truly do it one-to-one.
No, it's just a fundamental misunderstanding.
Yeah.
You know, it's just it's a complete misunderstanding. They're 100% wrong, and I will never back off on that. There's no way that a one-to-one translation is going to get you closer to where you want to go.
No, it's...
Because there's a thing called nuance.
Yeah.
Like...
I was watching this mediocre anime called Zom 100, and... There's this sequence that felt like a translator's nightmare to me because there's this lady who's basically her very weak arc is that her dad was always telling her what she should do. So it was like, everything surubeki da. And she's like, I heard Becky so many times I thought my name was Becky.
That's the Japanese line?
That's the Japanese line.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's not going to work.
It's not going to work. And so they went with... He told me I can figure something out. He told me I needed to do so many things, I thought my name was Anita. And I was
great.
Almost got it. But I actually couldn't figure out.
That doesn't make sense.
No.
It doesn't make sense because he would say Uni.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's actually a really bad mistake.
So it was like almost there. But I couldn't figure out why she said that until I paid attention to the Japanese and I was like, oh, he's saying Becky, and then she said, I thought my name was Becky. I had to like rewind in my mind, like I was, because like one to one there, what would you even do with that? No. Like you'd have to explain grammar, like a grammatical structure.
Times a million
to somebody.
Brother.
Yeah,
times a million.
It's very silly. So I guess with that I can let you go here.
You seem to understand a lot about the process.
If I have more thoughts about specific games, maybe I'll hit you up again. Yeah. But that was fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks. And time to get back to TGS.
Get back into the TGS.
Insert Credit Guy Den is a production of Insert Credit. Support the show at patreon.com/insertcredit, discuss with other listeners at forums.insertcredit.com, and find more episodes at insertcredit.com. This episode featured Brandon Sheffield interviewing Jeremy Blaustein, edited by me, Esper Quinn, with original music by Kurt Feldman. Thanks for listening.